I can't participate in this episode.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with our friend, actor and playwright Duck Washington. We talk with him about growing up mixed race and how that affected his views on religion.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
Hey.
And we have a special guest on here today. I mean, they're all special. All of our guests are special.
It's true.
But today's guest is extra special because he's here today. It's our good friend, Duck Washington.
What's up?
Hey, Duck.
Hey. Welcome.
And we are here to talk with Duck about a little about religion and about his show that he's doing with Fearless.
And bears.
And bears.
Not really.
Well,
pandas are bears.
Are they bears?
Yeah.
It's koalas that aren't.
Koalas are marsupials.
Right.
Yeah.
Koalas are marsupials. So
and huge dicks. So, I don't know. They're just too cute. They must be jerks.
Well, you know what's awesome about koalas though is like eucalyptus is a very powerful psychedelic.
Yes,
is it really?
Is.
And so like if we ate it, it would kill us. But koalas just trip all the time.
Yeah, that's all.
Koalas are always.
Koalas, you're all right.
Koalas are always stoned.
Yeah.
And apparently they're also assholes.
I'm just saying you never know. They look too cute, you know.
I've never interacted with a koala personally, but yeah. I have gotten the impression that they're assholes.
Koalas are nature's roommate that's behind on his rent.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
High all the time.
Yeah, he's just high all the time and
he's too cute to yell at.
Yeah.
Now I want to talk about animals.
All right, so, Duck, you are an agnostic.
I am indeed.
And we thought we'd talk a little bit about growing up in religion. You said you had some interesting stories about that.
Yeah, so, like religion for me as a kid was always a little bit of a weird issue. We didn't go to church. Part of that was the fact that my dad sometimes would work Sunday shifts, but I think even more playing a part of that is that multiracial families really weren't welcome in churches when I was a kid. Hmm. So
when
was born in 1976.
Okay.
My brother, you know, like I think like the tradition of not going kind of started.
I did not know you were older than me.
You know, he was born in like 72, 73.
Okay.
But it wasn't, you know,
that.
Like, it's like,
no,
we're like, we're like right after the civil rights movement.
I'm right around the same time as you. And like my parents were the first to get divorced in 88. Like I only knew one other kid with divorced parents. It was weird that people, so I can see that being, still.
I bet the rates were higher in public school.
Huh?
I'm gonna gamble.
I don't know.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So, I don't know that it was a situation where, like we couldn't go to church, you know, like, or people would shun us. But there was definitely this, I was led to believe that it was not a place where we were necessarily welcome.
Do you feel like your parents might have erred on the side of caution a lot just because it was easier to not even have to worry about dealing with something that might arise?
I think that's definitely possible. It's not something that we've ever really talked about. We didn't really talk about God very much in our house. Mm-hmm. We did have a Bible, you know, that kind of sat up on the shelf. But, like, we didn't pray before meals.
Yeah.
We didn't pray before bedtime.
Did you know what Jesus was and everything?
Yes, I did. But, like, Christmas, like, we celebrated Christmas and Easter, but it really wasn't about, neither of those holidays were really
presents.
About Jesus.
Secular Easter.
It was about spending time
Easter's
with family.
About candy.
Yeah, dude, we had secular Easter. We did bunnies and candy and jelly beans and almost, like, fertility rituals more than Jesus stuff. Like,
well, where did that come from? I don't know.
Easter. That's just what that is.
It's called Easter.
But yeah, so that being my background, even though I don't think my parents would categorize themselves as being agnostic at all, I had this conflict with religion. Like, why am I supposed to be in love with this guy that, like, isn't including me into his world? You know?
Yeah.
And so I thought about religion a lot as a kid, you know, and trying to figure out where my relationship with religion stood.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching an episode of Different Strokes where Arnold decides he's Jewish one day, and I'm like,
yeah.
Well, maybe I should do that. I had a friend who was Jewish as well. I was like, that's kind of interesting. And then my mom was like, oh, the presents are smaller. You know, you get them for 8 days,
but
you only get...
said two. That's crazy. My mom said the same thing when I said I wanted to be Jewish. She was like, they won't let you in for one. Like, good luck. And I was like, okay. She's like, plus you don't get as many presents and they're way worse and everyone knows it. Ask your Jewish friends if the presents are worse. And I did, and they were like, yeah. That's crazy. Yeah.
So I was like, well, I can't be Jewish then, because I gotta get all the cool gifts. I was like, so what is my relationship?
What's your material religion?
Yeah, you were like a Christmas capitalist.
Yes,
like
it was indeed.
Why would you not be? I mean, really.
Me and my brother both were kind of like investigators of what is under the tree. My brother to this day will still count to make sure that I do not have more presents under the Christmas tree than
really?
He does.
That's
like, dude. You are married with two children.
Yeah.
You make over $100,000 a year.
Yep.
That's just your salary. That's not counting your wife's salary,
right?
Who's also a doctor.
Yeah.
Why are you still counting presents?
To this day, in true divorced father like mode, my dad will preemptively say to me or to my brother, like, so he's got more presents this year, but you know.
But you got better stuff.
But I spent about the same on
values
you guys. I kept it really close.
The same.
So
he even
might look like he got a bunch, but like you know.
He even does it to me. He'll be like, well now, because we've been married 8 years now. He'll be like, well, Mom, and you know, in the family 10, mm-hmm. He's like, well, Molly, okay. So he'll say to his brother's girlfriend, Jenny, Molly, I know she got more stuff, but they are married. They are married, Jenny. She's been here longer, Jenny. I just want, and Jenny's just like, I don't care.
No one cares.
But it's so funny, like.
Yeah. Oh,
awesome. So Christmas with you guys, just one brother.
I have one brother, one older brother, Kevin.
My brother's Kevin. Nice.
We're so alike.
We are so alike.
We're the same people.
We are.
Except for a little bit of pigment.
Yeah.
Kevin's
and gender.
And it sounds like his father really loves him.
Oh,
there's that.
Oh, that's fair.
Damn.
Oh, never mind. Not the same person. Okay.
So
you're growing up and you're not really going to church because your family doesn't really fit in.
Right.
Which, you know, it makes sense. You know, I think about the church that I went to, and it was all white.
Yeah, and, well, you're Catholic. I mean, Catholics.
Well, there's Catholic. There are plenty of
non-white
black Catholics.
That's true.
Yeah.
And well, Hispanic,
well,
especially,
yeah, yeah.
But
there aren't a ton. Even today, I don't think there's a ton of integrated churches.
No, where, there aren't. But if there was a Catholic church, if you know, black people would tend to go to a black church, which is the wrong way of saying it. But, I mean,
mm-hmm.
They would go to a church that was predominantly attended by...
It's just, culturally segregated. Like, not like it's a rule or anything. It's
right.
Just like,
right.
It's not
these are where the people in my community go, therefore that's where I go.
Well, there's churches every five fucking blocks. So, you know,
right.
it's like you're going to go to the church likely closest to where you live. Well, and since neighborhoods tend to be segregated, churches tend to be segregated as well.
Well, I feel like people inherit the church of their families.
That's
or their
true.
Neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so if you are living, even if you are a black family living in a predominantly white neighborhood, probably you're going to seek out like community, you know, like same with, mm-hmm. with, you know, in my neighborhood, actually, which is weird for an Eden Prairie neighborhood, I would say that white is not the dominant race. It looks like it's mostly Indian and Pakistani families. Like in my particular neighborhood, there's maybe, I mean, I think, especially since there's been a lot of moving in and out, like it's more and more, and a few like North African families. But the church is still that churchtrosity that attracts white people from hither and thon, like,
yeah,
just like a goddamn
when
magnet.
When we went there, it was
all
it
white,
was pasty as
yeah,
hell.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like try to spot the one black couple in the...
You would have if they were there, though.
Yeah.
Because it was just a sea of just white zealotry.
Yeah.
Just like...
Not... Hang on. That makes it sound like the zealotry is about...
It was a white sea of zealotry.
Gotta be a better way to say that.
Anyway, Duck, getting back to you.
Yeah.
So, you thought about Judaism. You're like, not sure what's going on with this God fella.
Well, and you know, like Different Strokes, I think, was just the first TV show that kind of impacted the way I looked at at religion. I think the biggest one, the one that stuck with me the most, is I remember as a kid watching an episode of the Transformers cartoon.
Yeah.
Where there was a specific episode where there was some mishap in a football stadium where the Autobots and the Decepticons were fighting, and they were transported magically across space to this little alien boy's toy box. And then the alien boy kind of like helped the Transformers. But I had this switch click in my brain that was like, that's kind of like, you know, me playing with my toys. And that kid is kind of like a god to those Transformers. And I started thinking about me being a god to my toys.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, well, you know, like, I can give favor to ones that I like.
Yeah.
Or, you can be benevolent, yeah.
Or, you know, or punish ones that, you know, yeah, that I don't like.
And
I
was start
like,
praying, Optimus Prime.
And then I was like, well, maybe this is the way religion really works.
Yeah.
That I'm one of God's toys in God's toy box, and he chooses the ones that he likes a lot or doesn't like a lot and grants favor appropriately, and he's just there to be entertained or to receive praise.
We're
toys that he gave, you know, like intelligence so that we could go do whatever we wanted to.
When he's not playing with his action figures can play with themselves.
They can play
like,
with
there
themselves.
There wasn't Sims yet, but it's the Sims.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, maybe when God turns 15, he just walks away and then he stops sending, you know.
Then it's Toy Story 4.
He stops talking to people here on Earth. You know? Yeah. But that was a thought that stuck in my brain and made me think about things like, well, is there a God? If there is a God, is he a God I want to worship? Does he have characteristics that are not things that I would agree with having in my God? And that kind of took me down the line towards...
About how old were you?
Oh, I'm guessing that was probably like 1985.
Okay.
So I was probably like 9.
Yeah, I was, because I know I had a similar thing with like, because I had a bunch of my friends were Jewish. My two best friends were Jewish. And I remember my father telling me that they were going to go to hell because they didn't believe in Jesus. And I was like, that is stupid. They didn't ask to be Jewish. And
right.
He was like, but they can choose now. I'm like, no, they can't. Their parents are Jewish. That's dumb. And he was like, well, they can choose. And then, you know, but if they don't, they'll burn in hell. And I remember thinking it was that thought of, well, I don't think this is worth my time worshiping. Like, I just, that doesn't sound good. I'm not up for that.
That reminds me, I know Tim's a Muppet fan, so I'll bring up the Muppets a little bit. In my family, we talked about Christmas. One tradition that we have is we always listen to the Muppets Christmas album, John Denver and the Muppets Christmas album.
Yeah, it's an awesome Christmas album. We had that.
Every single year. Yeah. And there's a song on that album, or there's like a little story that happens before a song about Alfie the Christmas tree. And Alfie starts to realize that like everything doesn't, like not everybody knows about God. And any questions like whether, you know, do they still get to go to, you know, heaven? And, you know, and I thought that's like a really interesting
awesome
philosophy, especially for a Muppets album.
Yeah.
Especially from a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really, like, it wasn't one of their sentient, like, main characters thinking it.
It was a sentient Christmas tree.
That's awesome. You
know? But like I identified with that a lot and was like, yeah, you know, like, you know, God shouldn't care whether or not
it shouldn't matter.
I have faith. You know what I mean? He should be able to accept people who are good and do their best to make the world better.
Yeah.
You think that would be the more important part of whatever else to judge people by?
You would think if God was all powerful, he wouldn't need to set up rules to forgive people. He'd just do it.
Or not
judge people for being what he created them to
wouldn't
be.
Wouldn't need faith and devotion over just being good.
Or just wouldn't care because he is all-powerful and omnipotent and can... Like, that whole ants analogy. Like, ants could be worshipping me right now as a god. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I would never know. They could have a whole thing built around me, little ant houses down underneath the ground where they have shrines to me specifically as their god, and I would never know. Like, I mean, doesn't that seem, like,
care?
More likely? Like, that it's... Like, I don't know.
So, So you kind of are in the I don't know really what the hell.
I mean that really does put me in like I'm the essential doubting Thomas. Uh-huh. You know, from the Bible.
Which is a religious reference, everybody. Doubting Thomas is a religious reference.
Like I definitely think that there's a possibility that there are other forces enacting on the earth. I think that's possible. I also think that there's a possibility that that's just something that we make up to comfort ourselves. Like, I won't push farther either direction. I don't, you know...
Does it matter?
I don't know that it does matter. Like, I think what matters is that I try to do my best to be a moral person and make the world a better place. Yeah. And if there are powers, you know, out there after that don't agree with that, then I have issue with them.
We'll have that conversation.
I feel like
with those powers.
I feel like if this is all there is, then you should spend all your time and energy making this awesome.
Right.
And so if that, you know, the whole Pascal's wager, like, and then if you're wrong, what does it matter? What does it matter? You did a good life, and like you say, then they're going to decide regardless, right, if that's how they're, if there is a they and there's a power.
Whatever their rules are.
But I don't understand the point of like being unhappy and religiously devout, but unhappy. And when in on the off chance that this is all you get, they all say, well, what if this isn't all you get and there's going to be judgment? It's like, well, then I had a hell of a ride. But you can't even say that for the opposite.
Well,
like,
and I think there's something to be said for being good because it's the right thing to do and it's because it's what you want to do.
Yeah.
As opposed to being good because you don't want to be punished by God.
Sure. Fear of reprisal is not a good reason.
And there's
to be
also
a good
the
person.
Issue that being good is arbitrary based on a book and based on your interpretation of a
right.
book.
Of one book out of the many books that there are.
Very true.
Yeah.
So for some people, being good is not being gay. But for others, they read that same book and go, oh, that's not what it's saying.
Yeah.
You know,
the interpretations of good are largely subjective. I mean, some of it's, you know, all of it comes down to the golden rule, right? I mean, basically, that's good, is don't do bad things to people. Don't do things to people that they don't want you.
That you don't want done to yourself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
If someone says, hey, I'd prefer it if you didn't do that, that's...
Which is why I spank everyone I see. That's why I just love to slap strangers on the butt. Just really just, you know, and
Molly likes being spanked.
I like to give people free alcohol because I'm just wishing that would come back. Just spank me and give me booze, everybody. Golden rule, bitches.
Spanks.
I once had a...
give me a button.
I once worked with this French director working at the Guthrie Lab who came in, and his thing was he would give sticks of gum to everybody all the time. He's like, have gum! And he goes, free gum! Everybody, you want gum? You have gum! And I was like, this is the coolest guy ever. Yeah. I'm going to start giving gum to everybody. Yeah. And I went to the bar with some friends of mine, and I was like, I'm gonna start giving gum away to, like, strangers and stuff. And they were like, oh my god, you can't do that! I was like, what do you mean? They're people are going to think you're giving them LSD, you're, like, fucking trying to rape people! It's like, no, that's not what's going on at all!
What?
And it hurt me that, like apparently when you give away everything for free, people
think it's drugs.
It's the meme going around right now that's like a picture of
ecstasy.
A large variety of different emblem ecstasy tablets, and it's like, you know, if your kid gets any of the, you know, this candy, beware. People are giving away, you know, drugs, and this is exactly what ecstasy looks like. And watch out, check your kid's candy, and it's like, no one's giving away $500 worth of ecstasy on Halloween.
Yeah.
Like, somebody has a jar of pills there. They got other things to do.
What do I want to do?
Jar of pills.
Make $3,000 or assume some third graders are having a great night? Like, not actually even see it. Just assume everyone. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
So anyway, we should probably, I'm going to transition a little bit.
Ooh, okay. Good job.
Yeah.
Transitions are best when you mention them.
That's right. Smooth segue.
We talked about the fact that you were from a mixed race family, and we want to talk a little bit because you wrote a show for Fearless.
I did.
Coming up in November, like in a couple of weeks from when this podcast goes up.
Awesome.
People can watch it. Molly and I both were beta readers for the script,
and I'm illiterate.
And and Nick was not, because we were like, don't show it to Nick.
And racist, also. Yeah. The theme has made me very uncomfortable. I don't like pandas.
So the name of the show is Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales.
Yay! The A isn't part of the title.
But it's there. I mean, it's in the back here.
It's implied.
So The script is amazing. The show is going to be great. I'm very excited. People should go see it. But one of the things I thought was very funny is that when this was being, auditions were being advertised for this, the director, Jenny Young, advertised auditions, and someone said to her, you know, mulatto isn't a word that many people of mixed race prefer. And you should probably ask one of your mixed race friends what better word to use instead of this. And it was like,
And her response was, well, I'll talk to the playwright.
Yeah, because Facebook flagged the word and wouldn't let the ad go through because of the word mulatto.
Which is really too bad, because I, and I talk about this a little bit in the play. Mm-hmm. It's, the word does not have happy origins, nor is it a word that's, like, traditionally used in any regular sense anymore. A mulatto, like, from its etymology, is the cross between a horse and a donkey.
It's a mule.
Yeah. And so it's a mule. And so doesn't really have, like, the best, like, hey, but I think... I think it does have a historical context.
It's a hybrid.
But also, like just... Okay, so horse and donkey, problematic from the get-go.
Super problematic.
But then, like, mules are, like, sterile and not very...
Rented and beaten. Yeah,
and,
it's not good.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, not very bright.
It's not... Carrying drugs. It's not a good... It's not a good thing.
History's noblest animal.
No, it's not.
The mule.
It's not good.
It's...
You know, so I can understand, like it was a word that bothered me more, I think, when I learned, like, what the origins were.
Yeah.
But as time has gone on, I've also realized that there aren't really any great words to describe being half black and half white.
No.
You know, I mean, you can say biracial, but it doesn't, you know, specify groups or mixed.
Yeah.
If you put mixed in a title, it doesn't flow well.
It sounds like someone who has, like...
And other mixed-race tales.
Yeah, no.
Because then I'm going to get people come and be like, oh, maybe, you know, like he only talked about, you know, being mulatto
as opposed to being Asian and Native American.
Or Portuguese and...
Plus, I think the word gets attention.
True.
To be perfectly frank. I mean, the word gets attention, and getting attention is a big part of putting on any kind of theater.
And it's kind of old-timey. I mentioned a little bit in the play that mulatto is, it's kind of got a, like, a, it's like, it's an out-of-date word that still kind of feels like, oh, historical. Like Negro is a word that, like, you would not go up to somebody and be like, you know, like, I think you did a really good job on that, Negro.
Or even
my friend Duck, his father is a Negro.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Even that, no,
but
no.
But you do hear it. When in a historical context, when talking about
Negro spirituals
and things like that, it's so the more, or one might say, only acceptable times you ever hear it are when it's within a historical context.
Yeah.
You're referring to something old,
and in the context of the title of this play, I kind of felt like it was like a, you know, Paul Bunyan and other tales.
Like
putting it in a little bit more of a folky kind of
aspect. I got that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think, you know, there is something provocative about the title, and I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, when somebody says, well, I don't know if you should use the word mulatto, my response would be, you're right. I don't know if we should use the word mulatto. Perhaps you should come see the play and find out why we chose to do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm not a big fan of the word should.
But anyone, like, well, I mean,
people tell me what I should or shouldn't do.
Frankly,
with art.
Maybe it's a little bit of a content warning. Anyone who is uncomfortable by the presence of the word, maybe that's not the play for them to see.
That's a good point too.
We did a Ville show 3 years ago now, which was the handicap show.
More than three. It's at least
it
five.
It was before,
it was before Nick.
Yeah. All right.
It's been like 5 or 6 years.
We've been doing this a while now.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, we did a Ville show called Going Full Retard. And I knew full well that word was very, very,
but that
very
was
charged.
Around the same time as Tropic Thunder came out. So it was like in the lingo of you never go full retard. And
that
everything.
Movie
like,
5 years ago?
And in Tropic Thunder, that conversation was incredibly offensive. I mean, the two characters having that conversation are insensitive assholes.
One of them's in blackface, so
I pulled that word and that quote intentionally to refer back to, we're going to be insensitive assholes.
Yep.
you know, we are insensitive assholes. And, you know, whether it worked or not, and there was a lot.
It doesn't work because you never go full retard.
No, you never go full retard.
Everyone knows that, Tim. Everybody knows that. Exactly. You were setting the show up for failure.
And in fact, it succeeded really well. But that's not the point. The point is that a provocative title like that gets people to go,
yep.
I want to see what they're going to yep. do with it. And I think that the show, when I read the show, what I really enjoy is it's a mixture of comedy, but it's also looking at a really serious topic, which is growing up mixed race, which I know is a bad term, but growing up.
Mixed race isn't a bad term. It's just not.
It wasn't accurate enough for the title.
It's not accurate enough for the title, but yeah. growing up mixed race and that experience through the lens of comedy, which I tend to view the entire world through the lens of comedy.
Well, I think we've had a lot. I mean, we, like the theater community, the entertainment community, there's been more of a push toward being very open about what it was like to grow up gay and transgender and lesbian in a time in that 70s, 80s time when those things weren't really as talked about and it wasn't as accepted. And I think similarly, you know, a lot of young people like my brother and sister who are in their early 20s kind of are like, so what? So he's got a black dad and black mom. Who cares? Like, that's not, because to them it's not a weird thing mm-hmm. anymore. But as you've said, it felt that way to you.
Well, I think that there are probably young people as well that are, like, depending on what communities they're mm-hmm. growing up in, probably still feel the same way.
Yeah, when I went to college in 1996, my roommate was from a very, very, very small town outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and she had never actually seen a black person, like, in the flesh, as she said. She's like, I've never actually seen someone, like, met someone.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of TV, never actually met anybody. Like she's like, from afar once, when we went to Madison, and I was like, I know, and I was just like, oh, God, oh, honey, no, please don't say that. But
let's just keep this conversation inside the dorm room.
Yep, but she was guileless about it, and super sweet, and I would never have said she was racist at all. It wasn't that. It was just a never
but it's,
been.
It's amazing to me how, these issues, like, a lot of the things that I talk about in the play aren't really old stories.
Mm-mm.
You know, like, a lot of these things happen all the time.
Yeah.
One story I shared with the cast yesterday that's not in the play is I used to rent a house with some friends in Roseville, and one of our roommates moved out. And, you know, the next-door neighbors saw the trucks and everything, you know, getting filled up. And they went to my other roommates, and they were like, who's moving out? And they were like, oh, well, Jeremy's moving out. And they were like, oh, good. We thought it was that nice black boy. Which is like, that's nice, but at the same time, like, yeah.
It's so well-meaning.
it's like, if they weren't, there's nothing in that statement that implies intentional racism.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and in some ways, it's like, we don't know his name, so we're just going to identify him by the one thing. It's like, whenever I... There's a Morris dancer at the festival,
yes.
Derek, who's black.
Good name.
And great guy. I love him, and he's my favorite. He's a really good dancer. And when I'm watching,
he does all sorts of different folk dance from all over the world.
He's
it's just stellar.
And he's 61 years old. And
I didn't
just,
know that.
Yeah, yeah, and just he seems like a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Anyway, when I'm watching the Morris dancers, often the audience at Vilification Tennis is making fun of them. And I will just start talking about how much I love them. Because honestly, I think they are great. They know nobody is there to watch them.
Except when they are.
For our show, for the show where they have the biggest audience, they have almost nobody there is there to watch them, and they don't care. They put on a great show, and they love it, and they always come up to me, and they're like, this is our last dance, and you know, really just great folks. And I'll always say, well, Derek's my favorite dancer, and the audience member will inevitably say, which one's Derek? And I'll say, well, he's the guy without long hair and a beard.
Yeah,
and they'll go, oh, the black guy, and I'm like,
we had this at work once where it was like someone was like, oh, you need to go talk to Jackson, and I was like, who's Jackson? And it's like, Jack. It's like, which one? Who's Jack? It's like, well, he's over in graphic design. It's like, well, what's he look like? It's like, he has glasses. like he's a bigger dude, and it's like, well, what, and finally just to be like the black guy, and I was just like, okay, Jack. I'm like, like, come on, man, like, just like, I just, it's so frustrating to like, it's like, I don't want to just use shorthand. I'm not doing it. Like, just be like, I'm not doing it. I'm just like,
it is. Yeah, it's one of those things you can use to identify somebody. But yeah, it shouldn't be the only thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But
it's, do you guys, okay, so the example of the neighbor's comment about someone moving and them not wanting to lose the token nice black kid in the neighborhood.
They look so liberal.
I'm sure they thought really like just brought a nice touch of color to the neighborhood and just brought it. It's like a car with just one pinstripe. You know, it just classes up the joint a little bit. Is well-meaning. That's kind of in that realm of like microaggression-y stuff, where it's like, is well-meaning, unintentional racism a step forward? Like, is that a form of measurable progress?
I think it is. I mean, if they're looking at me being in the neighborhood with, as a positive, regardless of. Yeah. Of how unaware they might be on specific things. The fact that that's a positive and not a negative, yeah, to me, is a sign of growth. Well, you know? Like,
yeah. Like, not ideal, but...
You know, I talk a little bit in the show, like, I used to go around a lot of cities and with small town Minnesota and like interact with children through theater, mm-hmm, where I was probably the first person of color that they'd ever seen. And there's a lot of ignorance that comes with them because they've never experienced this. But like, because those experiences are positive experiences, they start to grow and understand, mm-hmm, through those interactions.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're there at the pinnacle of where we want them to be, you know, as far as understanding and acceptance. But I think it's a great starting point or a great point along the road.
So like the story I just told about the guy, the graphic design guy, Jack, which was when I worked at Shop NBC, like in like 2002. So, and I noticed anytime someone like, if that sort of interaction happened where it was like, fine, the black guy, the person's face would always be like, oh, I'm the asshole because I should have recognized all those other, you know, qualifying features. And does that feel like something that is, you see more often that people are like, feel bad for like anything like that? Like those, I mean, microaggressions, like things like that.
I think so. In my experiences, I think, mm-hmm, depending on the person, I see more people that are more careful about
awareness, you know, jumping. Is up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think awareness is up in a lot of fields, but I also feel like there's a lot of polarization towards one end or the other now. There's, yeah, not as much of like as is the case with a lot of things in our political climate in the United States right now. Yeah, people are running towards either side where it's like, yeah, Black Lives Matter. Boo! I want to run in this marathon. Yeah.
Black Lives Matter. Tell them to stop killing each other. Like, yeah. What? Yeah. Like, what are you doing? Boy. Like, what is, like, why would you say things like that? Like, just, oh my God, I can't even read those comments. I can't. It makes me angry and sad about my fellow Minnesotans. And it's, yeah.
It's not all of them. It's just some of them,
yeah,
who are assholes.
And I have to remind myself that people online, the loudest people online, tend to be the worst people in the human race.
And I promise you, I see less of it than you do.
Yeah, I bet.
Because.
So, we could talk a lot more about the show. It's a very good show.
Yes.
It is running the beginning of November. Well, kind of middle November.
Middle November.
13th, 14th.
At the Phoenix?
20th and 21st. At the Bryant Lake Bowl.
The Bryant Lake Bowl.
The Bryant Lake Bowl at 7 p.m. all of those nights. And Duck wrote and is starring in. Mm-hmm. And is directed by a friend of the show, Jenna Young.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Stage managed by some other good fearless folk.
You should really go see it. I think it's, like I said, it looks at a serious topic with a sense of humor. And I think that's what drew me to it when I read it. So we got to move on to five questions, though.
Five questions.
So, Doc, we've got five questions for you because you are a guest.
Okay.
And as a guest, you get five questions.
Oh, I will do my best to answer.
So, Molly, why don't you start with the first of the five questions?
Question number one, what is a movie that you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
There's so many. One that I realized, because I just stopped and watched it the other day for like the third time in like 3 months, is Dawn of the Dead, the newer remake of Dawn of the Dead.
The fast zombie version?
The fast zombie version. Mm-hmm. Like, Like, I'll just stop on that channel, and before I know it, the movie is over. It's like, oh.
That's the mall one, right?
That's the mall one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It was really fun.
And it's a really easy movie to drop in the middle of
You're like, who's dead? Oh, she's dead already. Yeah. All right, yeah.
There's a lot of fun little character moments in that movie that make it really, like, kind of lighthearted for how dark it is. Like, the binoculars game with the guy on top of the ammo shop. And, like, all the little character vignette scenes where they're, like, the sleazy dude and the chick having, like, crazy sex in all the different places they can get to
Which the sleazy dude is, like, is the dad from Modern Family.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So, yeah. All right. Good question. Question number two
is, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Oh, my geekiest... I think is going to be the Tauntaun sleeping bag.
Yeah!
Yes.
That you, you know, it has a little lightsaber for a zipper and you undo it and you can see all of the intestines on the inside.
Is it warm?
It is very warm.
I'll bet.
And you crawl inside and you get to rest your head on the Tauntaun's head like a pillow.
Because
it's like
smell?
Made like a pillow. Better
pretty
on
good.
The outside.
Pretty, but, it's all right in there. It's all right. It's not bad.
Yeah, unfortunately, the dog like really likes that sleeping bag too, so I have to be very reserved as to when it gets used.
If the dog likes the sleeping bag, it might actually smell worse on the inside.
So. Well, he's like, there's soft things I can chew in to keep it from getting damaged.
Yeah.
I have to, not use it very often.
But that's an awesome. That I wish I had one.
That was originally.
I don't use sleeping bags.
It was originally an April Fool's joke.
Yeah, and then
like so many people were excited about it. They're like, well, maybe we should make this.
Yeah.
I don't have a sleeping bag, and yet I want that sleeping bag. I would never use it. I would never use it, but I want it.
It takes up so much space in my closet.
Because it's the worst thing about being a nerd. You look at something, you're like, I want that.
Like,
I would never. I don't need this, but I want it so bad. Okay. Question number three. What supernatural being do you wish was real?
What supernatural being do I wish was real?
Mythological,
you can interpret that
religious,
any way you want.
Comics.
I'm going to have to go with... I want it to be Nightcrawler, but I want him to be my friend in that circumstance.
Yeah.
So he can, like, take me places I want to go.
So he can bamf you around?
Yeah, so he can bamf around.
You
want
Teleportation Butler.
I feel like if Nightcrawler was real, then by association, all of the X-Men would have to be real.
Not necessarily.
I mean, if there's one mutant...
What if he's dreaming all the other mutants?
We don't need Longshot and Dazzler. They can...
Yeah, what if he's...
Longshot is a mutant.
What if Nightcrawler is holding a snow globe? And inside the snow globe are all the other mutants, and they work at a hospital.
Did you just say elsewhere this shit? Oh my god! Okay, I was trying to be positive about it. Say if Nightcrawler's real, then you get the benefit of the other X-Men being real. Of course, you also get Magneto and the Brotherhood of Evil.
See, we don't need all that. We don't need all that, Jess.
Anyway,
we could all just be in God's snow globe.
Yes. There we go. All right. Question number four.
Yeah.
So, say religion is gone.
Uh-huh.
What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
I think that disease is a big problem that, you know, the way we treat nature, I think, is in a lot of ways too. Maybe one of the two of those, like,
how do we
combat getting ill, and how do we figure out how to preserve this world so that it doesn't go to shit, I think are probably the biggest.
I like that. Good answer.
Yeah.
That's, disease sucks.
I mean, that's when you look at like the really really big philanthropic organizations that like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and that have started, or like Jimmy Carter, where their goal is to wipe out entire diseases. How can we get the most distance out of like this money?
Yeah.
Like, they're going
malaria
for like
nets and
yeah right how can we quantify how much malaria can we stop for $5, and then that times however many people is kind of awesome, like looking at cost effective epidemiology or whatever. Our last question number five is, what is your favorite quote?
I'm gonna take it from a song. I mean, like, that my favorite quotes change all the time, but I think currently Bob Marley, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eye. me say war.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, Bob Marley. Bob Marley for the win.
Yeah.
Except, you know. Yeah.
I mean.
You just spent too much time around stoners. You just don't appreciate.
Man, Rastafarianism is really, really, it's super misogynistic. It's problematic. I mean,
I hear you there too.
It's like not to shit on Bob Marley, who is generally like a peace loving dude and was very prolific in his work. The popularization of Rastafarianism in his wake is like, I could do without. Like, you know, just it's kind of a
quote's still good.
Quote's still good.
That's great. All we're talking about, man. Is the quote. The quote is.
It was in response to Molly's comment about, yeah.
All right, so the play.
Never mind.
I'm going to shit on everything.
So the play is Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales, presented by Fearless Comedy Productions. You can find out more information if you like the Fearless Comedy Productions Facebook page, or if you go and look at our website. And that's, again, the 13th and 14th and 20th and 21st of November at 7 p.m. at the Bryant Lake Bowl in Minneapolis. So we know we have a lot of folks from around the globe who are listening who can't go. But if you are local, if you are from Minnesota and you're listening to this podcast,
or if you're going to be in town.
Yeah.
Or you could commission a private performance. You can fly us out. Yeah. We'll perform it for you.
If you have thousands of dollars.
But seriously, if you're going to be in town and don't contact us so we can put you on our podcast, because, you know, we'd love to have somebody.
Or they could buy the play from you and then they put it on themselves.
That's right.
They could use their own copy of it. They could buy the rights.
I just had this horrible image of like a high school junior like playing Duck's character, but like he's white and they're trying to figure out like what to do. Like some teachers like, what if we put a, like, how do we?
Somebody I'll tell you about the time I played Martin Luther King Jr. in junior high school. That was,
I played Roosevelt.
That's,
I played a Nazi.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I played a character whose name was Mocha, and she was a runaway from the Caribbean, and no one thought to tell me that maybe she was supposed to be black at all. I was just like, sure, she likes coffee. I was so just like naive idiot. I was like, she likes coffee, and she's singing a jaunty marimba tune. Like, I don't see. I think this is reasonable.
White people do that all the time.
Yep. In my experience, they did.
Yeah, well.
Tired of all this Hollywood whitewashing. All this junior high whitewashing. Yeah.
All right.
Serious problem in America.
So thanks for joining us, Duck. If you've been listening to the episode and you enjoyed it, you could always go out and write a review on iTunes. You could say that we're horribly racist. It's completely acceptable. We own it. And
you can say Tim's racist.
You can say I'm racist. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can go see Caucasian Aggressive Pandas.
You can do a lot of things.
A lot of things. But right now, you are just going to say goodbye, because we're done. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, did you hear about the party at the Chinese Zoo? It was pandemonium. Yeah, I know.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Bible.